Session number 15433.
Peter McAleese, side 17. Right, you're saying fantasy island and intrigue and all the rest of it.
So what we had was a boat there, and we were in this island, and we used to get in the boat first thing in the morning, go training. Then they turned up with some... We do physical training every morning, and physical training last thing at night. And during the day, we'd do weapon training. They turned up with some G3s and some FNs, and eventually they took me to one of the towns, and I walk in there, and there's these chaps with these white hats. Everybody of some form of importance seemed to wear a white hat. And I suddenly realised we were in a drugs barons area. And, you know, I spoke to the army guys about it, and they says, no, one of the reasons here is there's no communists in this area. These people are on sides, you know, and there was a sort of unwritten law between the drugs barons, who were in the right wing, and the FARC, who were on the left. I mean, you just didn't get any FARC in their areas. I mean, they control them with an iron hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, their actual security setup was, you know, better than I've seen in most countries. I mean...
Well, they're drug barons.
Aye.
How do you mean? Their intelligence?
Yeah, their intelligence and the security as well. I mean, every little corner had a little shop that sold cigarettes. Any road in their areas, there'd be a little shop there, and the shop had a radio on it.
Really?
So no one could move about there without their knowledge.
Really?
And, you know, the army there, you know, I mean, they openly liaise with these people.
Mm.
And as I say, we trained along there, and then we then moved to another area.
Did you speak to any of these drugs people? Or?
Well, I spoke to one of them, and in actual fact, I met one of them.
Mm.
And one of them was Rodriguez Gacha. I mean, we were training one day, and he came up, and he stopped at the top of this hill, and out came his radio equipment. And the army guy took me over, and he says, I mean, this is Rodriguez Gacha. And, you know, we'd been doing a jungle lane. Anyway, and, you know, they were obviously interested and whatnot.
Where did the money come to support your thing,
right,
do you think?
You know, I've got an idea where the money... I think the money may have came from the drugs barons.
Right.
Who were actually, you know, bankrolling the special operations side.
Right.
You know, of the army, because, you know, you can take it from me, I was in army headquarters, everything was done with the army, everything was smoothed across by the authorities, and there was no problem. I think the actual finance, although I never actually seen any money changing hands,
right,
came from them.
Was the money quite good, or?
It was, no, it wasn't that great. I mean, I've earned more money in other places.
Right.
And you can guarantee when the army get their hands on him, the armies of the world have never been guilty of overpaying anyone, you know.
Yeah. What was the... Were you given a uniform?
We actually got green uniforms. They were just straight green.
Yeah.
Boots, webbing, you know, webbing jackets. You know, the combat jackets, you know, with the pockets in them, you know, canvas ones, and then we eventually get decent weapons, you know, get the M16s and that.
Right. So, how long did the actual start-up for that in Colombia go?
Well, that was in February, and it went on to June.
Mm.
So what happened then was, as I said, so they then came to us and said to me, you know, the Suma Pass, the Casa Verde, you know, there's communists up there. And they've got the series of camps up there. There was a secretariat, there was a main camp, and then there was some other form of admin camp. And they said, we'd like you to attack a secretariat. I says, how many guys are in it? They says, 70. So we wanted this area taken out, you know. And I says, yeah. I says, well, how am I going to do this with 12 men?
But this wasn't the original target you'd been
No,
trying,
no. So it then moved on to the secretariat. So I said to them, well, can you get me some men? I says, no, because if I start recruiting the amount of men it's needed for this job, now this actually came from me.
Mm.
Now, tabloid reporters have read something else in there, but it came from me. I says, can you get me personnel here who may be ex-army, and we could lead it and do it? They says, certainly. So They then moved us from there to an area, what was the name of it? Oh, it's irrelevant anyway, north of where we were. And I got there and I looked at this place and I said, it was like something out of one of these, you know, these South American jokes, you know, where you get a circle, you know, of guys surrounded by a circle of guys, you know, the guys shooting out the way. And I looked at this position and I said, God, it looks, you know, it's very amateurish. Anyway, when I actually get inside the place, you know, when I took a walk around this, I mean, every position was sighted smack on, mutually supporting the whole lot. And
Well, this was a base.
It was a base, yeah.
All right, so it was.
But I was training these guys. See, asking.
So it was a defence in depth.
Yeah, it was. It was definitely whoever thought it out.
You were there.
And then the funny thing was, I was in. They put me in this little room, and I found a pair of slippers in there with Israeli markings on them. Just, you know, in a. Anyway, this is early days, yeah. So, I. Then says right. Says we've got some men and you can train, pick the ones you want to back you up, right? So they brought a load of chaps up and we did a bit of a selection there, right? So we then did 2 days there.
And these were locals, yeah.
They were locals. Oh. And by this time I was beginning to feel a bit inhibited. Oh. You know, anyway, let me break again here. I said, can we get helicopters for helicopter training? Because what I wanted the helicopters to do was take us onto the lower reaches of Sumer Pass, get us up as high as we could, so that we know we could do a night approach march up onto the place.
It wasn't above helicopter ceiling there, was it?
No, what we're going to do is get them to take us up to helicopter ceiling. Then walk up.
Right.
But you know,
so the place was above, target was above the helicopter. So that would have been above 10,000 feet or something.
Yeah. It was just under the 10,000 mark.
Right.
Anyway, we started training with these guys, and then they came to us and says, "You've got to move." I says, "Why?" I says, they said, "The police. We don't want the police to know that you're here because you know there's a thing between the police and the army." I could understand that. And then they took us and says, "We're flying you down to the south of the country." So we flew down to an area called the Yari. The River Yari, they flew us down there in the Dakota and unloaded us there, and then some light aircraft came and took us right onto the side of the Rio San Miguel, right down the Ecuadorian border. So I mean, these guys have had 2 days training, right, and it's been sort of infantry stuff, you know, stripping, assembling weapons, load, unload, make safe,
basic training,
and jungle range. Now, but they'd all been in the army before. You know, they said, right, we can get you the guys, they're all...
Do you reckon they'd had any military experience or not?
Oh, they had military experience, yeah.
You know, were they any good?
They were national servicemen.
Yeah.
So we get down to the Yari, and this is where it, you know, where it started, you know, started doubting what was happening there. So we then get down, and then aircraft flew us, and they flew us to the side of the river Rio San Miguel, right on the Ecuadorian border, and went in there, and it was, I've never seen the food in there, it's the worst I've ever seen in my life. They supplied us with this cook, and we nicknamed her Typhoid Mary, you know, and, you know, we were eating bits and pieces and just tins of this and tins of that, there was nothing. The next thing, a boat comes down the river with a bull tied on it, you know, so this bull gets, you know, pulled up the side of this sort of path from the river onto a volleyball court, which is in front of this house. And so they're all there. And, you know, the Colombians are really macho. There emerged from this group that we were training about 15 potential butchers, you know. So this poor cow, they get its head in between the fork of a tree.
There's a cow or a bull?
Bull. And they shoot it in the head. The next thing, it's on the volleyball court. And they've cut one of his veins and they're jumping on its stomach to pump the blood out because they make stuff like black pudding out there, the same as they do in Scotland, you know, the black sausage. And they started cutting this bull apart, and by the time they'd finished, it looked as if somebody had sort of opened its mouth and put a hand grenade down its throat. There was just this dead flesh all over the place, you know. And and then we had sort of fresh meat that night, which was nice, sort of just edible steaks with rice. And then the second day, it wasn't too bad. There was no refrigeration there. And then the third day, you know, they were getting the offal and everything that had been put through a grinder, you know, one of these, what do you call them, these machines.
Yeah.
And by the third and fourth day, you know, it was unedible again, you know.
Yeah.
And everyone, I mean, the weight started dropping off us, you know. And as I say...
But what about there? I mean, what about that? I mean, drinking water,
right.
Mosquitoes, malaria, right,
okay, right.
Bugs.
Everybody picked up bugs there. We all got this sort of dysentery type disease, you know. And the weight, as I say, the weight started dropping off us. But the morale was still good, you know, because there was always something happening with South
America. Well, you've got your 12 Brits plus these other guys.
How many other guys have you got? There's about 40 odd of them.
Right.
Right, of which we were going to pick our backup squad. But still nothing has happened. So, you know, we're all sitting there and then...
Have they got up to any reasonable state of training?
No, we had done 2 days with them. Right. So the next thing
But you still got rare weapons there?
Oh, we still have weapons,
right.
So, we... Then sitting there's this guy who claims he's a doctor who's been trained in Russia and he'd been with the FARC. You see that? So he then convinces all these guys that the best thing for them is to get circumcised. So he does all these sort of circumcisions and the next thing all these guys are all limping about and all going
septic.
So I've got to call my medics in to cure these guys up. So I mean there's 40 young guys all sort of limping about. You know how the Americans are very macho about their sex life, the South Americans, very macho about the sex life and that. And anyway, my medics had to sort of...
So you had your own, one of your blokes was a medic?
Yeah, well, I had three medics.
Really? Okay.
Aye. And this guy, they called him the doctor. Anyway, we finally get them cured.
So well, what, was he having a joke, this bloke?
No, he... And the next thing, as I'm saying, you know, when are we going to start training? So he says, you can start training. So we did. We did another 2 days. And I took them on patrols into the jungle and that. And we did another 2 days. And the next thing he says, we must move.
See,
this was just leaving. I says, what is it? He says, the communists here. I says, well, I'll tell you what. Tell me where they are, and we'll go and kill them for you. I says, how many is there? He says, eight. I says, tell me where they are, and we'll go and do it. He says, no, we must move. And I said, you know, I says, this doesn't seem right. So we then get in the boats, and we go about another 8 miles up the river.
Yeah. Where's the money going? Where's the money? How are you getting paid? The money was going in the bank account at this time?
No, in actual fact, at this time, I just managed to get the money for the guys.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right, the first
so
the,
how,
lot
how,
of money.
How much back pay was that, then?
It was in the 6 weeks, I managed to get them 12 weeks' money. And Dave managed to get them 12 weeks' money.
So you were six weeks paid and 6 weeks in advance.
Yeah. So we finally got that. And the next thing is we got up the river. And then he says, come with me. I says, I need an area to train. I've got to get the guys into the jungle, you know. So it's the experience working under the trees. So I then walk into this area and there's a camp there, and honestly, I've never seen them. They'd taken the bark from trees and split it and made pathways that, you know, through the mud with this. And I mean, you could walk along these, they were fairly firm pathways.
This was a camp, yeah, a camp.
Taking us to camp. Then I walked in there and he says, Communista, Communista. And I looked and I says, yeah. And then I see a sort of raised platform. And I says, maybe that's where the political commerce
stands,
you know.
Yeah.
And then I look round and there's all these lights, you know, old lights lying there. There's these tumbler dryer type things.
Mm.
And an awful lot of electrical equipment lying around. And then I went further up and I just found hundreds upon hundreds of these polythene bags.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I says, oh, yeah. And I says to the guy, I says, oh,
so
like communist. But in actual fact, it had been a communist base that they were actually cycling stuff through.
All right. So drug gang had been using this, yeah.
And
that's what, cocaine?
Yeah, cocaine.
Yeah.
So we then started training again. And I says, this is about the seventh or eighth week. And I say, he says, you must stop. And I says, no. I says, I'm really sick of the bullshit. So I said, I want to see the boss. You know, I want to get up there and I want to see the people who's running this. I can't go on like this. You can't ask me. I says, you're giving me these men. You know what, you tell me to train them and now you tell me not to train them. You know, when I'm sitting here, What do you actually want me to do? Tell me and I'll do it. But you know, that there seemed to be terrible restrictions on us the whole time. Can you see that? There was, you know, we... And I said, I must see the boss. So eventually, bullied my way onto an aircraft. And I got myself up to... There was two things. One, the stamps had run out of my passport. And two, the other guys. Because we'd been there over the 3 months. And, you know, I wanted to see the bossman and get this sorted out. Anyway, I flew up there and I'm taken into the building. They've got the DAS, they call them. They're the people that handle all the immigration. Again, there, and I had this liaison chap with me. All my documents were all stamped up. Passports given back. And I eventually got to see the chaps who were on the operation. Now, from what I could gather, there was... The colonel who was with us most of the time, and there was another four majors involved from the army. And I stayed there for two or three days, and then I went back down the bottom. And we carried on and on. I'd finish up, I said to the guy, I'm sorry, unless you give me the okay to do this target, unless you give me the resources to do it, I said, I want no more. And he says, you better tell. I said, I'll tell it to the boss. Because all we were doing was sitting inside of a river. So I'm back up again. He says, okay, you can pull out.
Go home.
So we came down, and they never flew us out this time. They took us down to a place called Porto Assis. We crossed over to Ecuador and had a few drinks in Ecuador. You know, we were going down the river in boats, pulled into Porto Assis and got a civilian flight back to Bogota. Which was all booked up for us, and then they took us to a hotel, and I says, you know, right, either you want me to do the job or you don't want me to do it. You brought me out here in a 6 month contract, and you know, you know we're over 3 months through it, and I haven't done one thing. I says, you tell me that you want me to attack a communist secretariat, you know, then a house, then you tell me it's a secretariat. And every time I say yes, you keep postponing the thing. Why? And they say, oh, the time's got to be right. The time's got to be right. You know, we've got to get the timing right. And he says, well, I'll tell you what to do. I says, I'm going home. And when the time is right, call me back again. So we broke up.
And that was it? You went home?
Yeah.
Did they stop paying you?
What they did is they paid us to date.
And that was it?
Aye, just paid us up to that date. I spoke to the guys. I says, what do you want to do? Do you want to hang about here? What? Everybody agreed. Unanimously, that they go.
What happened to the locals that were engaged?
The locals were broken up.
Right.
And you know, and this is one of the things here. You know, I've been accused by the tabloids of training hitmen. Is it okay to talk like this?
Why not?
Yeah. Of training hitmen, but you know, one of the things here is, you know, there's nothing I can teach a Colombian about assassination. I mean, they're the experts. So, what I took them in was 4 days of basic tactics. You know, and it never went beyond that. And I came back, and that was the first Colombian troop.
Right. What did you do after that?
I never did nothing, because what happens when you come back from one of these trips and it hasn't been sanctioned by the ex-regiment people or whatnot here, you tend not to get any work. So I was sitting in the house. And
would you have gone on that if you had an offer to do something else? I mean...
No.
You needed the money, basically.
No, but see, the story of my life, Bruce, has been that I've always tried to do things properly. And then what happens, the right to do it properly is taken away from you. And you just say, I'm going to go for it. I would never have gone to Angola if I'd been given a job by KMS when they said they were going to give me a job. I would never have gone to Rhodesia. And it was always what you've done. First of all, I couldn't get a job because I'd been naughty in the army. Then I couldn't get a job because I'd been... in Rhodesia. Then I couldn't get a job because I was in South Africa. Then I couldn't get a job because I'd been in Colombia. You know, and everybody's assuming all the time what you're doing. But, you know, if I had a job, I wouldn't have taken these other jobs. So, you know, really...
So it's not out of first choice?
No.
What would you have preferred to have done?
Now that it's over,
yeah.
I'm glad I took that choice. Can you see that?
Yeah.
At the time, I wanted to go and work and get a job training people in places like Sri Lanka and other countries, because it's something I do well. I'm good at it, and there's not many people who were in during my era are better than me at it.
Right. So, you're cleared out and you're back in Hereford.
Yeah.
And you can't get a job because it was a bit iffy, previous one.
Yeah.
So what happened?
No, it wasn't iffy. No, I mean, nobody knew about it at that time.
Ah.
It was just that, you know, it's just, where have you been? I've been in South America. Who were you working for? The minute you don't see one of the companies, the guard goes up. Can you see that? So, as I say, I was sitting in the pub, and lo and behold, I was down to my last £50, and Dave Tompkins walked through the door.
Again.
And this time he went, "Hiya, guys," you know. And I'd gone back to Hereford again to look for work.
Yeah.
Because
and your wife and family are still in Lincoln?
Jane moved from Lincoln to Birmingham.
All right. And anyway,
Jane was still in Lincoln. Yeah.
When you say you'd split up, you're only split up on for paper purposes.
No, that wasn't it before I got the job. See what?
All right.
The thing is, while I was with her, she was going to get problems off the Social Security.
Yeah.
I just said, "Jane, I'm leaving you," and I left her. But once I got the job with KMS, my money always went home.
So on the wife and kids side, it's stable. They've got money coming in.
So
you're in Hereford.
Yeah, I can't come back into Hereford.
Dave Tompkins
through the door, and he goes, "Right." I says, Dave, what is it? He says, "There's work." I says, what is it? He says, "It's bumping off somebody that needs bumped off." That was the terminology. It wasn't, terminate with extreme prejudice or anything like that. You know, it was, they want somebody bumped off.
Well, what? And you said yes.
No. I said, "What you got to understand, I'm the person that's on the breadline."
Yeah.
So I says, "Who is it?" He says, "Pablo Escobar." I says, "What?" And there was sort of a moment of apprehension. I says, "What is it?" He says, "Well, he's getting a bit uppity and the authorities can't get to him." So I says, "What is it?" "It's the same deal again, the same people." I says, "Aye, okay." So we then fly out there. And the whole thing...
Surely you must have thought that your chances of pulling that one off and pulling that off without being damaged yourself must have been good.
Right, number one is when Dave said that to me, the sort of get slight butterflies, and which turned into a form of excitement, and... I said, "Dave, look, I'll tell you what, dude, let me have a look at it. Let's plan and see if it's feasible."
But how long have you known Dave Tompkins then?
I've known Dave Tompkins since Angola, on and off.
All right. And what was his background, regiment? Or?
No, Dave was a civilian who'd get involved in these mercenary type deals,
But I mean, basically, somebody you relied on.
Oh, Dave's,
yeah.
Aye.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, for putting a deal together on the financial side, Dave and I have got a good thing. Dave handles the financial side. I don't touch nothing about it.
Mm.
I do the military side.
Mm.
And, he makes sure people are paid and whatnot. That's always been the case.
So, there you are, on an aeroplane, going off to Colombia to bump off Pablo Escobar.
No, to see if it's feasible.
Ah.
Right. So I then get out there, and... I get a briefing by the same chap.
The chief colonel?
Aye, the colonel.
Yeah.
And in actual fact, like what you've got to understand is there's colonels and colonels. A South American colonel, South American officers do not behave the way British officers do, South American officers will get mistresses. South American officers might go into bordellos. Can you see that? British officers don't do this type of thing. Or else are not seen to do it.
Mm.
Let's get the difference right. And, the hands are always waving all over the place. And, you think they're arguing with each other and they're just trying to sort of iron a point out. So we go back out again. And he says, "Right." So he says he wants us to have a go at Pablo Escobar. So he then says, "Where is he?" He says, "At a place called Hacienda Napoles." Right? I says, "Okay." I says, "Get me the maps, get me the aerial photographs." So we get the maps. I says, "No, let's take the aerial photographs ourselves." So we used to fly over there you know, mixing with routine flights flying across there, take all the photographs we needed, built up mosaics and whatnot, and we started getting a good idea.
Did you use stereo?
Oh yeah, bringing them together, yeah.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And they got me a stereoscope, everyone really? Wanted to die, really? They got me, yeah. And so we started working on it. And the other thing is I did a little course in aerial photography.
Did you?
I did in Hereford.
Oh, did you? All right, okay.
It was only a little week course.
Yeah.
And, so, between the maps and the aerial photographs, and what I did find, the discrepancy in the maps was phenomenal. You know, when you tried to tie the photographs in them.
Anyway, how old was the mapping then? The
mapping, it wasn't that old, but it had been, it was just actually re-photostated off another map, can you see that? Mm. So it was, you're getting the original map, which had been re-photographed, because there are terrible people for dams out there, they're always conserving water. So if you try to operate off a dam, you fly over them, there's 10. Can you see I'm getting that? Anyway, I looked at it, and I seen, you know, I actually flew over his house, a little airstrip beside it, the airstrip had been cratered the whole lot. And I started building up a picture of him. And I says, they got me together, and I says, can it be done? And I said, yeah. And, you know, I sort of got the normal, holy, you know, the sort of clapping and whatnot. So,
was it us and them, or were you actually beginning to get more of a team, or how was it working with this South American?
No, they were difficult, honestly, they were difficult. So, you know, by this time, we've met.
How are they treating you, with respect or?
Oh no!
You just come in to clean the drains. Basically.
No! They treated me with an awful lot of respect. Uh-huh. But you know,
deference. I mean, excuse me, being vernickety, but I as well, deference.
No, the intelligence boys actually treated us well. When we got to the infantry guy, one of them had been trained at Fort Benning, and he fancied himself as a bit of a heavy. And you know, one day I actually said to him, you know. Well, what you can do is, why don't you get your own people to do this? You know, if you're as good as you claim you are, why don't you do it yourself? Yeah. And he sort of took a back seat, and he was always trying to. It was like almost like a.
Right, we're just going to continue there after some sort of mechanical interruption on this tape. You were saying how you got on with the South Americans, and they were treating you with respect, basically. So what happened then after that?
The impression we got was the infantry officers seemed to be trying to get more involved, but it was on a level where he seemed to be telling us what to do, rather than being involved in liaison. Mm. And, for example, one night we worked till about 11 o'clock at night, the normal carry on, waiting to see someone later, and then said, tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock you will do the phone. I says, no. I says, no, we're going to go back and, you know, sort the problem out, that, you know, finalise the whole thing. She says, no, I won't. And this was the first sort of clash we had with anyone. Mm. And, you know, every so often he was a bit hot-tempered. Mm. And every so often he'd calm down again and says, yeah. And then he got the impression of the small man's complex, you know.
How many of you? It was just you and Dave Tompkins, or who else there?
No, there was. There was only Dave and I at this time.
So what then happened? So you started getting a clash apparently with this guy.
Yeah.
And what happened then?
We sorted it out, and it flared up again a couple of days later. Mm. You know, and I finally got a hold of the colonel. I says, you've got to sort this guy out. Mm. You know, the fact is if he is here to do a liaison with us. You know, if he wants to try and lead the thing, let him come
call
along
him
with
leader.
Us. I call him the leader. Say, but you know, at this given time, he's shown me no traits of leadership, other than being offensive. Mm. So that kept him out of the way for a while. And then he sort of sulked into the background and a sort of sulk. And every so often he'd get a bit uppity again, and we just. Put him back in his place.
But you were still on good terms. Was he the only one that you, as a group, had fallen out with?
No. That was the only one. Yeah.
So was he actually a key bloke, or?
No, he wasn't. He was a sort of Q-type chap. You know, he was fetching stuff for us. Yeah.
So what happened then?
So we looked at the situation. Mm. I says, yeah, we can do it. That's easy.
And they punched the air and all
And then, you know, I've got the normal, the old A's and whatnot from the...
What was Escobar's disposition in? This was the Hacienda Napoli?
Yeah, that was his house.
Oh, yeah.
And it was in the Magdalena Valley. It was up from an air base called, in an area of Porto Triunfo, which was, you know, runs from the, you know, the road connects up from Bogotá and then shifts off going east towards, west towards Medellin, you know.
And the nearest big town's Medellin.
Yeah, the nearest city, yeah.
And so, how many troops had he got working for him, and what was the opposition?
What I did is I got all the guys, all the int chaps, I couldn't say, right, what is it? He travels with 16 bodyguards. And the whole staff, the whole Hacienda Napoles was 70 men.
Right.
We looked at the house and...
There's 70 guards, 70 guards, 70 soldiers,
guards,
yeah.
Yeah, but there's no more than a group of seven in any given place. Can you see that?
And then what do you mean in...
Like, there wasn't 80 guys together, there was 18 patrolling the area, like in a sort of, you know, 5-mile radius.